This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And for everyone who wants to know about the story behind a book. And boy, oh boy, do I have stories today. So I am so excited. I have in the studio with me Louise Harris. Hi, Louise.
Hi, Patsy. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you know, as you know, I am me, Patsy with a Z, the last of the Red Hot Book Lovers. And, of course, when I heard that you have a book coming out.
Yes, I do.
October 23rd.
Yes.
And so I wanted to get you in here. We can talk about the book and just ask people to do some pre-ordering because this is going to be a fun read for them. I love it. You know, one of the things I love is that when I get a book and it's about a subject that really is something that's important to me, I love the Revolutionary War. So one of the things that right away when I opened the book and when I started reading it, and you have letters.
Yes.
Now, I love letters. I love books with letters, books with journals.
This was my first time in doing the past. Usually I write in present day and there's just a little link to the past. This time I decided I wanted to write about the past, and I know that one of the ways we know about our history is through letters and journals. So that was how I decided to go into the past, because it is still set in present day, but it goes back into the past.
That dual timeline,
yes.
Which Tasha Alexander has made very popular with her
yes.
series, Lady Emily series.
Yes.
Two different timelines and always the story
all linked
related.
Together.
And it's
right.
linked, and the clues are there. And that's what makes it so fascinating.
Yeah, it was fun. I really loved expanding my horizon that way. And with me, I always know the beginning and I know the end. And it's the middle comes as I'm writing. So connecting all those dots was really a fun activity for me. So,
well, I'm glad. You know, I was so happy that I could get you in here because, you know, I'm always so booked in. People, I always tell people, you have to tell me long time in advance when a book's coming out because
I know.
I'm already booked. I have a booking, I think I have one for May, already in May.
That's so, a credit to your reputation and your expertise. So.
Yes, well, I have so much fun. I have so much fun. And we're going to have another guest while you're here in the studio because I just love the dynamics of having somebody in the studio. It's so much fun.
It is nice. And it is nice. I know one of the other times I was on, you had someone talking and I was here and I was interacting with that person and that was fun too.
Yeah,
so
yeah, because that's what we're here to do, to promote writers and writers promoting writers.
Each other, right, exactly.
That is so important because, you know, you have to get out there and you can't always just talk about yourself.
Right.
I mean, as interesting as you might think you are, you have to, you know, have other conversations and as you are now, you know, going to be promoting your book and hopefully doing some events. You're going
yes.
to be out there talking.
I usually try to do some local events. I don't know what yet. I might do the Florida Botanicals gift and plant sale, but I haven't signed up for that yet, so I don't know.
Well,
but
that's a great one.
It's a great one. I sold a lot last year, so.
Yeah, I love that place. So, as I said, you know, it's just always so much fun just to interact with authors of all types, and I'm so happy. Right now, I think we're just getting a call in, and I was so thrilled when I met this author at BoucherCon here in Florida few years ago, and I think he's almost on the line. It's John Gilstrap, and we're going to be talking to him. And so, you know,
it'll be good.
Yeah, it'll be good. It'll be good. So we is John on? Yeah. Hey, John?
No.
No? No, I am hoping.
Actually, I thought he was early.
No.
Okay, let me try to call him.
Oh. Okay.
So, did we mention the title of my book? I don't remember.
I think we did. I think we did. I'm not sure. Okay. Yeah, I get so excited. The 1776 Soldier. And this is part of a...
It's every writer has to have a hook. And my hook is that all of my titles are 1776 something. And that is for various reasons. One is because I'm from Philadelphia and I always set my books in Philadelphia. And then I do like the Revolutionary War period. So I want to reference that. So yes, this is the fourth in the 1776 series.
And with this one, the cover is amazing.
I believe that you have to have a cover designer do your cover. Otherwise, you're going to have a bad cover. And bad covers don't sell.
Yeah.
So I did actually get a professional to do it. So I got the picture, though, and then the cover designer used the picture.
Yeah, well, it works. It's dramatic.
Yes.
And right away, it's intriguing. You want to know, what's it about? And as you said, it's set in present day.
Right.
But it touches on, of course, history, which is part of the...
One of the things I liked about that picture is my character in the past is a messenger in the Revolutionary War. So the picture has a pouch like a messenger would. So that was one of the reasons I liked the picture.
And boy, oh boy, the message is important.
Of course.
That is an important part of the thing. So while we're waiting, I hopefully we'll have John back in a little while. It's your main character. Tell us about her.
Okay, the main character's name is Roxy Stevens. And if you have read my previous book, 1776 Bed and Breakfast, I introduce her as someone who works with Buck Robertson. But the place where she was working gets ruined because that's part of the investigation. And so she has to find another job. So she gets hired as a chef at the 1776 Inn. So that's where this book takes up, where she's studying for culinary school, and she's the chef at the inn. The main male character, he is a soldier in the Army, and he's also doing HVAC because he dropped out of college. He didn't want to do school. And so he wanted to work with his hands, and HVAC is something that he can do. And most people don't realize that the military has all these professions, just like the secular world, because they have to fix things like their boilers. And so there are HVAC programs in the Army.
Okay. Well, I'm going to interrupt you for a minute because I want to introduce to everybody, John, are you there?
I am here.
Okay. Well, I'm so happy, John, that we got you back. John Gilstrap, of course. We met at the Vinoy Hotel at Boucher Khan, and ever since then, I fell in love with... I had already read your Jonathan Grave thrillers, but the new one is called Harm's Way. And you are always putting Jonathan in harm's way.
Well, I do write thrillers.
You really do, John. Now, I have in the studio today with me another author, a local author, so it's fun to have her in the studio, and she's written a book called The 1776 Soldier, and it's Louise Harris. So Louise Harris is sitting here next to me. And
Hi, John. Nice to meet you.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. Well, the two of you are two of my favorite authors, and I just want to tell you, John, the new one, oh, my goodness. So what you do to the, John, what you do to the reader is something fierce.
My job is to cause people sleep. That's what I do.
You do. And, of course, you bring back all of the characters that we love, and that makes it so much fun because it's like coming back to a family.
Well, I'm glad. And a family you like to hang out with, not the one that gathers at Thanksgiving.
Well, definitely we want to hang out with them. So what's new with this one? Because it's pretty exciting.
Well, Harm's Way starts with the kidnapping of some missionaries in Venezuela. And the one of the people who's kidnapped is very special to Irene Rivers, the FBI director. And she asked Jonathan to go down. He's a freelance hostage rescue specialist, and asks him to go and rescue this one hostage. And he said, "Well, I'm not going to do one if I can't do, you know, all 10. That just doesn't make sense." So he goes down, and as the book unfolds, we find that the stakes are much higher than just separating hostages from a drug cartel. It turns out that the particular hostage that Irene's, the FBI director, is interested in, she's interested in him for, you know, political and some other reason. He is a very special hostage. And once they're down there, they find out that the Russians are working with the Venezuelans to put in some weapon systems that shouldn't be there. It's kind of built on the fact, I read an article, well, probably 2 years ago now, because it takes a year to write the book, the Russian military officials have been meeting with, they have a greater and greater growing presence in Venezuela, which of course is just a political vacuum at this point. So that's what happens. And it's really, when Jonathan Grave tells you to put your weapon down, it's really in your best interest to put your weapon down.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they really, people really should listen to him.
They should.
So again, you know, when I met you the first time, I said, "Well, this is." Of course, I had my bear with me, Pekka, and he just adores you too.
Well, he's a very friendly bear. He doesn't say much.
No, but
he's very soft and cuddly.
That's right, and he's always there, keeping an eye on me. Keeping an eye on me in the mornings and seeing it. But then I get up at 5 o'clock and start working because he gets lonely if I, you know, sleep too late. And I understand you have a new puppy.
I do. We have Kimber. She is a called a Caviston, which is a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel and a Boston Terrier. It's just 17 pounds of adorableness.
Doesn't interrupt you when you're writing?
Actually, it's funny, if I'm on a deadline, as I am now, I have to work outside the house because she won't leave me alone. She digs at my hand, shakes her forepaw and pulls at my hand while I'm typing, and it's really difficult to type under those circumstances.
Yeah, it would be. See, Peck is much quieter. He just sits there and stares at me and glares at me if I don't do my work. So, you know... I was telling Louise here that a lot of my listeners, 9 of my listeners, have signed up for NaNoWriMo. And so one of the things is I've been all month, I'm trying to encourage them to, you know, stick to it once they start. And you certainly know how to stick to it. So just remind my listeners a little bit about how you started, because you didn't come, you know, just, you had a whole life before your writing career.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was, I started out as a firefighter, and while I was, it was a volunteer firefighter at a station that ran 14,000 calls a year. And I found out there's a thing called a safety engineer, who knew? And so I went and got a degree in that, which led me to my career is 35 years as an explosives safety expert and hazardous materials in general. That was my specialty in the fire department as well. And when that line of work led to hazardous waste and hazardous materials at the transportation level. And then, you know, in my spare time, I was always writing books. I was always writing stories. And I wrote, finally, in 1990, well, I wrote it in 1994, sold it in 95, and came out in 96. The book, it was called Nathan's Run. It was my fourth book. The other three were just terrible. And each one was less terrible than the one that preceded it, which is nice. And then when Nathan's Run came out, it changed everything. I mean, it sold ridiculously huge numbers of copies here and around the world. And so in my early 40s, I ended up having a whole new career as an author. So I'm about 30 years into that.
Well, that's the exciting thing. I always tell people, you know, whatever job you're doing today might be the job that will give you the inspiration for writing a great book.
Right. Well, you know, especially since you're talking about NaNoWriMo, if you're a writer, you write. You know, if you're a storyteller, you tell stories. I think there's a lot of pressure that people put on themselves during the National Novel Writing Month, NaNoWriMo, to throw words onto the paper and to go to the end, you know, start a story and get all the way to the end. And I think that's fine. I think it's a noble goal. But then I think they need to take pressure off of themselves to understand that that pace of writing, the words will be on the page, but don't fret if they're not your best words. Writing is rewriting, right? So it's important to get to the end, but then it's also important to go back to the beginning and do all the polishing that is necessary.
And enjoy the process. Editing is fun.
Editing is fun.
Well, it is fun, but it's fun and it's not fun. I think enjoying the process of writing, I call it page 200 syndrome. I think I'm on my 29th book now. When you get to about page 200, you realize this story sucks. I'm the worst writer that's ever existed on the planet. But hey, I've got this great idea for another story. Because beginnings and endings are fun to write. The middle is where the work happens. And people need to force themselves. Once you've started it, you've got to force yourself to get to the end, if only for that sense of triumph that you did it.
Yeah, that's important. I think that's... I think the purpose... as I explained to the people who do NaNoWriMo, I explained, it's not... this is not the book that you're going to publish. But if you can just appreciate that there's... effort that you have to make, a commitment that you have to make, and if you're proud of yourself at the end of the month, even if you don't make the 50,000, but you've actually taken that time to put words on paper and to start. And these are people who have never written anything, and that's like you said, you were writing little stories. And I think one of the things I tell my listeners, just jot down stories as they come to you, or keep a journal, keep something, and in between, of course, do some really great reading.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And in the writing process, switch it around. If your inclination is to write in the first person, write in the third person for a while and see how that works for you. If you're telling a story from one point of view for a while, switch around and tell the story from the other point of view. What happens is it stretches your imagination, and you start to think of the story as a living thing. You know, the process should be fun in the sense that I think, you know, in a perfect world, you get into that zone where you're just kind of playing with your imaginary friends, and you happen to be writing it down on paper.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you do have some great tips for writers. How do they find out some of your suggestions about writing?
Well, they can go to my YouTube channel, which is Author John Gilstrap. I think I got 34, 35 videos on there. Everything from how do authors get paid to, how long should a book be? How do you choose a subject and what have you? They're short, but it's all from somebody who's walked the walk. So,
yeah, that's what I wanted to tell people. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, is that your YouTube channel, I think, is very helpful. It's very encouraging for writers to look at this and to hear how you explain things. I love your YouTube channel.
Thank you. The overarching message of my channel is there are no rules. Because in creative endeavor, there are things that work for me, and that's what I share, but they may very well not work for you. People's processes are entirely different. I don't outline. I tried outlining for a while, and it just didn't work. The story never looked anything like the outline. But I have good friends who can't begin until they've got their 60-page outline of where the story's going to go. It's all about what works for one person doesn't work for the other, and that is perfectly fine. And if anybody ever tells a writer, you can't do something, you can't start with a prologue, you can't start with the weather, you can only, the only dialogue, acceptable dialogue tag is said. All of that is just pure garbage. If it works for you, it works for you. Don't listen to people telling you that there are rules.
And you definitely go your own way. And I think with your action sequences, you write some of the best action sequences. I think all of the other, there's so many authors, when they give you a blurb, they'll always talk about how your action sequences really are so great.
Why, thank you. And there's a secret to that, too. And the secret to a good action sequence is to make it a small world. So if the world is at war, if you're writing a scene that's set in warfare, World War II, you pick a point of view and you stick with the soldier and what's going on with that soldier. It's a very intense experience that you can run through the senses of that one character. And that's the secret to a great action sequence, is to not try to tell it from 1,000 different points of view. It's from getting into one or two. I mean, you can shift points of view, obviously. You can do anything you want. But the secret to an action sequence is to keep it a personal experience for the character whose point of view you're in.
And you certainly accomplished that with Jonathan Grave. You know, I think that it's... when I think about BoucherCon and how wonderful that opportunity was for so many authors, and of course we met here in St. Petersburg and then later on in Dallas, and one of the things that I was so impressed with you was the way that you handle a panel. your panel discussions are the best.
Oh, that's very nice. Thank you.
You know, you know how to, it's so important in a panel when, as you were in Dallas, you're handling the panel, but you're, at the same time, you're complimenting each of the other people and bringing them in to the discussion. And that is a real talent.
Well, you know, a panel discussion, particularly in my business, you know, people are not there to learn a scientific topic. They're there to learn about the writing process or whatever the panel is, but really they're there to be entertained. And I've been doing this for a long time, and you're always on a panel with people who have not been doing it for a long time. And I think it's really important for the veterans, the more experienced writers, to give an opportunity for the less experienced writers to have a shot at answering the questions and to entertain the audience. And it's a delicate balance, because a lot of writers are extraordinarily shy. And well, you interview people for a living, so you know. You get some writers on, you ask them a question, they say, well, not really.
Oh, I have those ones. I'm pulling teeth. But usually then I start talking about something completely different. So I mean, it's so much fun to talk to authors, and I'm that's why I wish you were in the studio. I want to get big enough that I could fly you in, fly all the authors in, because it's so much fun. I have Louise here. Louise is a local author, and she's so enthusiastic and so... she's so cheerful and happy when she's talking about her book, and and I'm getting a kick out of it. And her book is It's called the 1776 Soldier, and I'm going to be talking to her about that in a little while. But again, John, it's always fun to talk to you.
It's been a great time. I'm glad you had me on. And really quick, Louise, 1776 Soldier, I was a history major in undergraduate school. What's it about?
Yeah, tell John.
I can't hear.
Oh, so
I can't hear him.
Okay. All right.
Did he ask me something?
That's why I wasn't. I was wondering why she wasn't responding, because she usually talks. She talks a lot. So we're just not hooked up here for some reason. She doesn't hear you. But it is a fine book. It's about some mystery about a lost message.
The book is about I write romantic suspense. So the book is about this murder. That there was a murder in 1776, and then there was also a murder in 2023, and the two murders are connected. And the chef and the HVAC army soldier, they're the main characters that have to figure out who killed the person who was killed, which was her aunt, in this timeline, and what how it connects to the Duke's murder in 1776. And then along the way, they're also becoming and falling in love with each other and living their lives and getting in danger. So it's a lot like what you do. So
exactly. She also incorporates journals and letters in the story, which I love.
Yes, to connect the past. There's letters from the male character, and then there's a journal from the female character in the past. So that's how you hear about the past.
So John, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I didn't. I'm sitting quietly because I don't know that they can hear.
Okay,
it's a three-way conversation.
I don't know, something happened here. Anyway, John, it was wonderful to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining me today. I know that you are inspiring to all of my listeners, and I just want to tell them again that they can find your book, Harm's Way, by John Gilstrap. It's online. It's fantastic.
And a good starting place is johngilstrap.com.
That's what I was going to say. And also, I will tell you, I like the Audible.
Basil Sands is terrific. The guy who reads it is terrific.
I know. I listened to it. I thought, my goodness, this guy can... He can make it exciting. So a great, great job. A big compliment to him. So, Jonathan, I always call you Jonathan.
I know.
Why do I do that? John, because, you know, you're the hero. You're the hero, John. That's it. John Gilstrap, you're the hero. And your new puppy knows it, too. So.
There you go.
Okay. Thanks again for joining me.
You bet. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, we're going to have a few commercials, and then we'll be right back.
What does Derek Zoolander have in common with Holden Caulfield, or Wonder Woman with Jane Eyre? Each is a protagonist, a shining star, whether on the page, the stage, or silver screen. I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. When it comes to storytelling, protagonists stand in the spotlight. They are primary, numero uno, of chief importance, VIPs. What they do or say affects everything and everybody. What kind of characteristics do protagonists have? It varies. They might be strong, courageous, and honorable, but with a flaw. For example, in Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones was definitely heroic, except when it came to, you know, snakes. What about Superman? Wow! Now there's a super-duper hero, right? Except for, you know, kryptonite. Hilary Swank won an Oscar for playing Maggie Fitzgerald in Million Dollar Baby. What a great performance. Except, spoilers, she dies in the end. How about Erin Brockovich? She's heroic in real life, as well as a movie. Not many people can do that. Plus, she's still alive. So let's see. Where were we? Oh yeah, protagonists are people, just like you and me. Except they're not. They run into danger while the rest of us flee. They take on the villain at high noon while we hide in the corner. And sometimes, in saving everyone else's life, they die. Like Natasha, aka Black Widow. What motivates protagonists? Many things. They might be seeking long-lost treasure, like Indiana Jones, or trying to save a family member, as John Wayne did in The Searchers. Or, like Ripley in Alien, they're fighting a horrible, slimy monster. Yuck. Protagonists live complicated lives. Something always goes wrong. There are obstacles, false starts, setbacks, betrayals, mistakes. Good plans go bad. Bad things get worse. So whether it's the witch in Wicked or Kermit in the Muppet movie, remember this. It isn't easy being green. I'm Jim Lamb, and you've just learned a little something-something about protagonists.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I am in the studio here with Louise Harris. Hi, Louise.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Okay, great. Now we can talk about your wonderful book. It's called The 1776 Soldier. The 1776 Soldier, and it is going to be released on October 23rd.
Yes.
And I love the idea. I love old inns, and I love this idea of the 1776 inn.
Yes, well, one of my previous books, my second book actually, is the 1776 Bed and Breakfast. The name of the inn is the 1776 Inn, and that has been passed down, and so all of my books after that one kind of are set in that same inn. They're set in different places, but they always have a connection to that inn. So this book, the main character is the chef of that inn, and the main male character, he is a brother of somebody that was in 1776 Musket. So he has to go to the inn because he's training HVAC, so he has to go to fix their HVAC system. So that's how he meets the chef. And
who is?
Who is Roxy Stevens. Yeah. And she and Jake is the male character's name. And there's a murder, and they have to figure out, well, it's Roxy's aunt that gets murdered, and Roxy's aunt mails her documents that connect to the murder. And so that's what puts her, even though she's a chef, that's what puts her into solving this murder, because it's her aunt, and she has the documents.
Yeah, well, we always need a murder in a this is a cozy romance mystery.
Yes.
And so it's imperative that we have a murder, and then we have to have clues. And that's part of the fun of writing, isn't it?
Yes.
Putting all of this in. Now, you use Lady Arabella. Tell us about Lady Arabella and who she was. And throughout the book, you use her journal, her letters.
Right. Lady Arabella. So I have two main characters in the past who also fall in love. Zebulon Adams, who is Jake's ancestor, and Lady Arabella is, it's actually Jake's also, but it's Buck, my FBI agent's ancestor, is Lady Arabella Winchester. And her father is a duke, and he comes to negotiate a peace with the colonists in 1776. And he gets murdered. And originally, people think that the Duke is murdered because he was trying to negotiate a peace. But that isn't actually why he's murdered.
Well, but we can't tell why he was
murdered. We're not going to tell why he was murdered.
Because, I mean, this is the fun thing about... I like when a book has this dual timeline, because I like to think back to 1776 to learn a little bit about what was going on at the time, and it was pretty exciting. And there were the colonists, there were the British who came over, and so it's a nice dynamics there.
Yes, and I used the letters and the journal to help everyone know what's going on during that timeline. A lot of what I write is in that timeline was fictional. I mean, I made it up. But there is a key mission that is real. And so the whole thing about the Duke, that really never happened, but
It happens in your book, and in fact when it happens in your book, it becomes so real, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It's amazing when you're writing, and then you come out with an idea, and then you start working on it. Like Lady Arabella, for sure, she's a real person after a while.
Yes, she is a real person, at least that I get to know.
And,
yes.
And that's what happens with characters. It's like another local author we have, Rita Moreau.
Yes.
And Rita Moreau writes, also cozy mysteries, and she has two characters in there. One is, Mabel, who is a divorcee, and
decides
to set off across the country, and then discovers that she's got a sidekick, Irma, who happens to be a spirit, a sprite.
Yes.
So, when you talk to Rita, I mean, those people are real.
Yes.
you know, she's not Gaga. She really isn't. But it happens. It does happen.
You get so in the writing, you get so involved in your characters that it's like talking to them or them talking to you. And that's part of what's fun about the writing process.
Well, I like Roxy. First of all, I love that name. I love her too. She's interesting.
Yeah, she. Okay, so in the 1776 Bed and Breakfast, that's where she was introduced. She was 18, and one of the scenes, she has her ponytail, she's blowing bubbles, and she's wearing her Tinkerbell sweatsuit, and that just tells everybody what kind of character she is.
I remember that.
And she's, so in this book, she's 2 years older, but she still has that bubbly personality. And she does actually have a past that she's trying to hide, but that she has to work that out too. So that's what she's struggling with.
Yeah.
So.
But now she has a job with responsibility.
Yes, she is the one that does all the catering, all the food, and she loves it. But you know, she's always in the kitchen and has flour in her hair. And
did you have any experience working in the kitchen?
Actually, I do cook a little, but I'm not like my mother at all. No. My mother, she'll have these big feasts, and all the tablecloths have to be ironed, and the napkins have to be just designed right, and all the silver and china.
Am I your mother? That sounds like me.
But me, I'm just like, if everyone's having a good time, that's good enough for me. I don't care what it looks like, and that bothers her. But
yeah, well, I'm sort of like, I like that. I was always like that. It's funny.
So, to answer your question, Roxy's probably the opposite of me. And that's another good thing about writing, because you can create characters who are opposite of your personality.
Yeah, exactly. Take on this other virtual reality, you know, go around the house.
My personality comes through in Angelique, that is kind of based on my life, so...
So tell us about Angelique.
Well, Angelique, again, she was the main character in 1776 Bed and Breakfast, but she shows up in this one. And she is the owner of the inn. And when I was a kid, my parents had a house in Cape May, New Jersey. And my mom, it was several apartments because my grandmother lived upstairs. We lived downstairs. Then when my great-grandmother died, when my grandmother died, we rent out the upstairs apartment. So my mom ran it like a bed and breakfast. So I grew up learning all these things about, you know, giving teas and making food for the bed and breakfast. And I'm from Philadelphia. We always spent our summers in Cape May. So that's where the whole history thing comes from in my life. But she has black hair. I have black hair. She gets jittery about stuff, and I get jittery about stuff. So I kind of mild. And my dad was in the Coast Guard. He didn't die, but he was in the Coast Guard.
That's part of this process of becoming a writer. You don't know what you're going to draw upon, like John Gilstrap. I mean, he was a firefighter for, you know, many years, didn't know he was going to become a famous writer one day.
And that's, a lot of times that is how it works. I know John Grisham, he took all of his books from his law practice. Carol Perry, she uses her experience of her hometown, which is Salem. And so you have to start with what you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and it rings true when you're writing it,
right?
And it really, and then of course you can fashion things. And I've been working, you know, I write scripts, and I worked in Hollywood, and I've been working on a screenplay for years, in which I kill a whole boardroom full of lawyers. And I don't know if I will ever finish that script or if anyone would ever produce it, but it's so much fun. I'm killing them off one at a time.
It would have been your perfect opportunity. Would have been the writer's strike.
Exactly.
You missed it.
Yeah, you know, you can do a lot of things when you're writing. It's so much fun. So when did you write your first book? I mean, how...
The first one, 1776 Scroll of Secrets, was finished in 2006. And I was in Arizona. Well, my whole family, my husband and my three kids were in Arizona. The kids were little. This was the first time that I was away from my family. And I was really lonely. And so when the kids would come home from school, I would turn on the cartoons, and I would just sit on the couch writing, kind of getting rid of my loneliness by having the character absorb my loneliness. And then in a couple of months, I had a finished manuscript, and then I had to edit it, and I got it out in very short time. So that inspired me to actually go back and finish the one that I was struggling with, because 1776 Bed and Breakfast was going to be my first one. But I was struggling. I kept hitting chapter 10 and wouldn't get past chapter 10. So I would rewrite it, put in new characters, and then start all over again and get to chapter 10. So then when I finished Scroll, I figured out how to finish Bed and Breakfast. So
you learn as you go. And yeah. That's a beautiful thing about writing. It is a craft. And as John mentioned, his first three books are still in a drawer somewhere. Nobody's reading them. Maybe one day, you know, somebody will be doing a dissertation on his writing.
Yeah.
You know, how they do. Everybody, please. I don't know how many dissertations I have read about F. Scott Fitzgerald. That is like every. Everybody getting a doctorate in literature has to do a dissertation on F. Scott Fitzgerald. Really, get more original. Do somebody else. There are other authors. They all want to do so. Maybe somebody will do John Gilstrap, and then he'll show them, the old ones, so they can see how he progressed. But that's what happens.
That is what happens.
You get better. And all along, you're having fun doing it too. Discovering a lot about yourself as well as about writing.
Yes, and I also want to point out that, well, I always knew I'd be a writer because I've been writing since I was a little girl. I actually published my first poem when I was 12, and I got paid for it, so I was a published author at age 12. But what inspired me to write romance was my grandmother. Because, as I mentioned, we were in Cape May, and so all of my family and cousins and everybody would come down to Cape May, too. And then we'd all be on the beach together, and my grandmother would be sitting there with her romance novel, and her when she got to the part that was very risque, her leg would start shaking.
And Grandma, what were you reading?
And everybody would know that's what part she was in. And that's what inspired me, because if she enjoyed those, then I would want to write something that she enjoyed. So.
Uh-huh. Grandma, you were an inspiration. Oh, is that wonderful? Oh, that's so cute. That's adorable. So, The 1776 Soldier by Louise Harris will be available on October 23rd. But meanwhile, you can pre-order it.
Yes, it's available on Amazon right now to pre-order.
And get ready to have some fun reading
it. And the Kindle version's only $1. So if they want to pre-order it for $1, they can get it real cheap.
Well, that's a bargain, but definitely it's wonderful that you're here. I'm so happy that you came out with another book, and next time tell me in advance, I have more time to prepare. But I'm so happy that you're here today, Louise. It's always fun to see you, and your part, a very important part here of the St. Petersburg area.
Yes.
Writing groups and
yes, and just one more plug for my editing.
Oh yes, please.
I do write fiction, but I also have a business where I edit other people's work. So I edit nonfiction and fiction. So, I have on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Google. You know, you can search for me if you need an editor.
So they just type Louise Harris?
Yes.
And editor?
Yes.
Okay.
It should show up. But if you want to...
Well, I will put also a link
to my website.
Yeah, I will. And your website is just Louise Harris.
No, my website is Last Research and Editing.
Whoa. Let's say that slowly.
Last Research and Editing.com.
lastresearchandediting.com.
Yes.
Okay, well, I will put that also on my webpage for
you.
Thank you. And definitely, I know that you've edited quite a few of the authors who have been on Joy on Paper
in the past. Yes, I have. Yes.
Huh, great. Okay, so if you need an editor, you contact Louise, and also if you just need a nice read, a romance, I don't know if you'll...
That'll only take you one day to read it.
A day, depending.
On how busy you are.
And how much your legs are shaking. But anyway, Louise, I think you're fantastic.
Thank you. I always enjoy coming on your show.
Well, it's so nice, as I said, to have you here. And again, we want to remind people... I met you at the same time that I met Carol J. Perry, and my goodness, she's up to book 13, and
I'm so proud of her.
Yeah, in her Witch City Mysteries, we're all so proud of her here on Joy on Paper, because she was my fourth guest, and it's been a thrill watching her career develop, and it's a thrill watching you. As I said, now you've written this book. This is your fourth one, and the fifth one on the way.
I don't even have a title yet.
You don't have the title yet. It'll come to you. It'll come to you, and I'm sure that it will give you a lot of joy. And that's the important thing.
Yes.
As I tell everybody, I mean, that's why I named this program Joy on Paper, because it's both the joy of reading, but also that joy that you get when you see your words on paper, right?
Yes. I love when the book actually comes from the printer.
You get excited?
Yes. So I'm getting excited to see it. So.
Okay. Okay. Well, and if you're doing any book signings or anything, let me know. And I will promote them too on my Facebook page.
All right. I appreciate that.
Because that's what we have to do here. We have to help authors find more readers, and readers find more authors, because really, in these times of
you need life, something
yeah,
good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
You need sometimes.
That's another reason why I write. It's to give people something to escape from all the bad stuff in the world.
Yeah, it's all the bad stuff and the stresses of
everyday life.
Oh, yes. Oh, gosh. Anybody who gets their electric bill knows about stresses of everyday life, right?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm not even going to talk about if I see one more jar of mayonnaise for $9. I mean, this is insane. So yeah, exactly. Read the 1776 Soldier, and for a little while you'll forget about it. Okay, thanks again for being in the studio. And as I always tell everyone, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel, like we are hoping for Carol J. Perry. And you never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So get busy and write, and say something nice to somebody today. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. Thank you so much. He saluted me, and I saluted him, because I should have been a general. Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine what a general pension is? Wouldn't that be nice? Anybody.
I have no idea.
It's nice. Believe me, it's nice. Everybody, have a lovely, lovely day. And on Thursday... My goodness, Bria Burton is going to be the guest host here on Thursday, a special sci-fi hour. So you must come on Thursday and join us. It's going to be a heck of a great show. Bye-bye now.